Welcome to Legends of the Hall, the podcast centered around the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame in Colorado Springs, Colorado. This is professional rodeo announcer Steve Kenyon. Today's show is an encore presentation with one of the most popular cowboys and the hero to a lot of saddle bronc riders in the PRCA. Billy Etbauer joins us. Legends of the Hall is sponsored by Wrangler. Long live cowboys. In just a moment, you'll hear from Billy Etbauer.
Hey y'all, this is Cody Johnson. When I was starting out in music, most every radio station and venue I went to told me no. At that point, you got two options: tuck tail and quit, or buckle down and fight. Well, I'm a fighter, not a quitter. And that's why I wear Wrangler jeans and shirts. Their toughness and style are legendary, they're an iconic symbol of the West, and there's no quitting them either. Life's not about the destination, it's about the journey. And if I'm gonna enjoy the ride, I'm riding in Wrangler. Wrangler, long live cowboys.
Welcome to the Legends of the Hall podcast. This is so much fun for me because I get to reach back and talk to some of the people who really have helped to build professional rodeo and make it what it is today. And if you go through the PRCA's media guide and you read the biographies of saddle bronc rider after saddle bronc rider after saddle bronc rider, there's a question in there: who do you look up to? Who really? And the answer is not always, but is very frequently, Billy Etbauer. Billy Etbauer joins us on Legends of the Hall. Billy, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
Well, it's been a few years since your last trip to the NFR. It's been a few years since that last world title in 2004. You guys have been busy since then. You've set up a horse business. I want to get into all of that later on. But, I mean, you haven't sat around and let the time go. You've been working pretty hard, I think, haven't you?
Yeah, we've been staying busy, that's for sure. Yeah, we got a lot of horses running out of here between our mares and then a bunch of recipient mares, and you know, but just trying to keep feed in front of them, and just like now we're basically knee deep in mud right now, you know, which is a blessing to have the rain, you know. So yeah, we got plenty to do.
Yeah, inducted in the Hall of Fame in 2012 alongside your brother Robert. The two of you combined for 7 world titles. Think back on that day. What was that day like, Billy?
Well, it's, I don't know. I don't know how you really explain that. You know, I mean, it was what an honor and a blessing it was for us to be able to make a living doing what we love to do, you know, and for everybody to feel that you're, you know, the potential to be in that, you know. So well, I just thank everybody for their support and you know, everybody that, you know, felt that we deserved to be there, you know. So just thanks everybody for everything. So
21 trips to the NFR, 51 go round wins, the second man to go over $3 million, and the first one to do it in one event behind Trevor Brazil, who obviously competed in multiple events. 5 world titles. You look back on that now, and what do you think as you look back on that career?
Sure, I'd like to do it again. you know what? Like I say, what a blessing, you know, and to be able to have the family, you know, between Robert and Danny and Craig, you know, all rodeoing together like that. You know, I mean, it's, you know, we all just absolutely loved what we were doing, you know, and everybody's family, let alone fans and friends, you know, were behind you 110%, and you just couldn't ask for a better, more fun life than to do what you love to do and be able to make a living doing it, you know. So
if it was me, Billy, it would be hard to not go back and multiply those 51 go round wins by what a go round win pays today. Just to see what, you know, the money has grown so much. You guys helped to lay the foundation from that. But, I mean, do you ever think about, wow, you know, if we had that kind of money available to us, way back. Of course, you weren't paying $5 a gallon for diesel either. So was that.
yeah, and we wasn't paying $100,000 for a pickup either, yeah, you know. So, yeah, no, it was great money like that. In our day, it was great money, you know, and especially even by the time that I got done, what we were earning when I started professionally and when I ended professionally, you know, the numbers were huge from that time, you know, and just like that, having the sponsorships, you know, started coming on kind of about that time, too. So, you know, when you take Mr. Funk's Express Ranches and you get that kind of people that is supporting that cowboy heritage and the cowboy all the way around, you know, that's what it takes to just make things bigger and better. And, you know, like what an honor to be underneath of them and having them help you down the road, you know, because it's just none of us, Robert, Danny, Craig, and I, none of us could have done everything that we was able to do because of Express Ranches, you know. So it takes everybody's help, and we sure appreciate everybody helping us.
I think most people know the story, but remind me of the story of when you guys first started. And it was Robert, Danny, and Billy Ettbauer, and Craig Latham, who I think a lot of us always felt probably was an Ettbauer. He just didn't have the last name. But you guys pooled your money. You weren't rich in the beginning. And, you know, if somebody won a third place paycheck at a rodeo, that maybe was what got you down the road to the next one. Talk about those early years.
Oh yeah, and that's for sure, you know. And then just like that, we called Craig. Well, Craig and I, our rookie years was the same year, and so we started rodeoing professionally together. And then, like back in those days, you could only buddy two, you know, and so in order to have, you know, there was always, you know, you could buddy four people, or, you know, you could enter them the same, but only two could buddy, you know. So we had Craig and I were going one way, Danny and Robert was going another. And, you know, it was just, you know, to be able to do that and, you know, keep on going, we had to pool, you know, none of us really had any money. We were just living day by day. And Robert, actually, there was one time there that Craig and me and Robert, we all had to get a flight from, and it's, I think, Pueblo to somewhere. And Robert and they went and got borrowed some money from the bank. And, you know, so we were all combining our money after that too, to pay for that bill, to just for the one plane ride, you know. But to kind of, to just keep going down that road, we didn't, as a whole, we didn't have to borrow money all the time, but we was borrowing it from each other in the same senses that, you know, every, what you won went back into the kitty just to keep everybody going, you know. And thankfully after everybody made the finals, you know, Robert and Danny made them in 88, and then Craig and I and Robert and Danny all made them in 89, you know, on, you know, so everybody was able to kind of stand on their own feet, you know. Not to say that we might try to help each other out periodically here and there, maybe a little bit, but nothing like what it was. It took all four of us, our paychecks, to get us down the road. So
Billy,
it was a blessing to have everybody to keep the hold together like that.
Yeah. Billy, I remember when I first joined the PRCA, it was, gosh, it was 30 years ago now. I should probably call and get that gold card, shouldn't I? It's a whole other story. But when I first joined the PRCA, and when I was thinking about joining the PRCA and really getting involved in rodeo in the late 80s, early 90s, the story I always heard was you rodeoed during the year at that level to make the finals, and you hoped you broke even during the year, and the finals was where you made your money. I don't know that it's that way today because so many events are paying so much more, but is that an accurate description of the especially the early years with you guys?
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. For sure. Yeah. I mean, anything at the finals after that was, you know, just icing on the cake. And, you know, and then just like today, depending on what somebody's making, you know, I mean, there's, and especially in the timed events, you know, between the barrel racing and Bulldog and Calf Rope and Team Rope, when you're having to pack horses around and you've got to pay, you've got to have the pickup, the trailer, you know, let alone the horse and all that money that you get into that, you know, I'm just glad that I was a bronc rider, you know. Just packing the saddle around is just, you know, I would have to say the rough side guys, you know, they're, I'm not going to tell you the top 15 are making money before the finals, but, there's more of them that are, just because they don't have to have all that other equipment, between the pickup and trailer stuff, but like that's where all those sponsorships have come in to helping all these guys so much more, there's just no way that you've got to have some money coming from somewhere to do that. Cause you just can't good paying $5 for diesel. You can't just, go and buzz down the road and do that yourself. That kind of money's got to come from somewhere.
Yeah. I look at the guys today and, the especially the upper echelon rodeo athletes, they kind of look like NASCAR drivers with all the sponsor logos and all that. You guys had one or two. You had Express Ranches, basically.
Yeah, no, and I always stuck with Express. I really feel Express was one of the, I think between, of course, Dan Mortensen had DeWalt, back in the day. And then, I think as far as a true sponsor, I had Express Ranches, and I'm sure there was some more out there. But I guess that was just because we was knocking heads all the time, that was two of the, the core sponsors that started things, that was really deep into it from the beginning, and like that, I wouldn't have been able to do what we do, even Robert and Danny Craig, the whole lot, because we were taking a plane from the sponsorship of Express starting in with me in 96 and everybody else from 97 on, and I had a ruptured disc in my back in 92. And, if I wasn't flying, then basically I was spending most of my time at home just trying to get back to healthy where I could ride good again.
Yeah.
So those sponsorship deals is just, it's just helping everybody survive and be able to make a living doing what they love to do.
I think back on times that I interviewed you when you were competing, you always went out of your way to make sure you talked about Express Ranches. I remember it seemed like a lot you would reference, whether you were asked about it or not, your back was holding up okay. That was an issue you had to deal with a lot in your career, wasn't it, that back?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it was from 92 on. I ruptured the disc in my back in 92 on. And really, when they finally figured it out, it was 93. That they finally figured out, I guess, what was wrong, and they went and had surgery. So I was walking 4 miles every day and doing all these exercises and stuff just to keep everything held together so I could keep riding. And just like that, if I were to ride in a vehicle all night and all day like I was before, then I was getting out and I was crippled the next day. So with Express being, we were able to fly in, we had a few different planes that we flew in, but the most of it was in a pressurized 210. And actually we took Mr. Funk's Lear a few times too, to get us from point A to point B, but I was able to stay healthy. And like I say, sleep in a hotel room, on a bed all night, and wake up in the morning and do my exercises, and we'd fly over to the next rodeo and the same thing. So I was able to stay healthy, during that, let alone, I think it saved on everybody, being able to go longer and stuff, just to be able to go to more rodeos and not have to drive every mile of it, So it was a big time blessing to be able to do that.
There are a lot of us old guys like me who look at a rodeo arena today, and the next generation of the guys in the blue Express Ranches shirt show up, the Wright family. It's almost spooky to me to see how Mr. Funk and the Express Ranches folks and whomever is in charge of all of that today has been able to find over the last three decades the two most successful families of saddle bronc riders to get behind.
Well, I don't know that Mr. Funk and that whole deal is, it's just great people, and I think, that's a God sent deal that, everybody works at taking care of Bob, and Bob works at taking care of everybody, because he's got the biggest heart there is. And, you know, I think a lot of people have a big heart to be able to try to fulfill his dreams too, you know, and do what they can to you know, make him feel good about it and what he's doing for them, you know. So you just can't say enough about what he's done for everybody.
Yeah. What do you ever think about, you know, the comparison of the Wrights and the Etbauers watching Stetson and Statler and Rusty and Ryder compete, and your career overlapped the boys' dads? I think Cody was just kind of starting out when you were getting done, if I remember right. What do you think about when you watch the Wright boys today?
Yeah, no, it's great. You know, I mean, and there's a bunch of those kids ride great, you know, and it's in the horses, you know, the horses are so great, you know, I mean, it's just a blast. And like that, to have those Express shirts on, you know, that's just kind of a little extra bonus, you know, but those guys still have to go take care of their end. And if everybody could stay healthy and they were all going, then you'd really have them colored up. But if you'd have 8 or 10 shirts out there instead of just 3 or 4 or 5, whatever's healthy, you know. But it's great, and it'd sure be fun to knock heads with them, you know. Like back in the day, or you know, I mean, they ride great, and just like that, we had Cody was a great guy, and we had fun rodeoing with him, you know. So it's just fun to see all these kids the way, you know, how great they ride. So it's awesome.
Can I ask you about 2003 and 2004 at the National Finals Rodeo? You drew the same horse back-to-back years, Cool Alley from the Kesslers, set arena records with 93 point rides in 2003, and then matched it in 2004 in round 10, in the process winning your fifth world title at the age of almost 42, 41 years and 11 months. Tell me about the first ride, and did you get a little excited when you saw him, when you saw you had that horse again in the 10th go round the very next year? What was that like?
Yeah, well, it was crazy. I mean, it was basically scary. Because, well, you know, in the first year, and I'd never been on him, you know, you just knew that he was a bucker and was a great one, you know, like the first year that I had her. And so it was, you know, just to be able to make the whistle and kind of hang in there and keep everything going, you know. And you know, I never got off of one thinking I made the perfect ride or the awesome ride. There was always something that I could do better, you know. So then when you come down to 04, when it's for the world and horse of the year and the 10th go around and everything, the whole scenario was kind of perfect. And just like that, I was just going to try to make the best ride I could, you know, and like that, you're not going to be able to just hang on and get by something like him, and especially the way that I ride, you know, or rode, you know, I'm just thankful we just kept getting set back down in there, you know, it was definitely a hair-raising experience, you know, and it doesn't get any better when you get all done, you know, because it was right there at the tweeter that I bucked off, and I actually, when I hit the ground, then I separated my ribs, and thankfully it was the 10th round and it was all done, you know. But you know, it didn't hurt me then at all, you know, but it was an awesome feeling.
I want to ask you about the guys that you competed with, and I want to frame it this way. Your brother, Robert, won world titles in 1990 and 1991. You won your first one in 92. You mentioned Dan Mortensen earlier. Dan won his first one in 93. And 94, 95, you win in 96. It would be easy, given how great the Etbauers were as a group, to say who was your biggest rival, and for you to say my brother, or my brothers.
Yeah.
But was there a should we look back on you and Dan and think, you know, these two guys are two of the greatest of all time? Dan's another one. I started this by saying, you know, if you read the Bronc Riders bios on ProRodeo.com, a bunch of them say their most respected guy is Billy Eppbauer, and a bunch of them say their most respected guy is Dan Mortensen, or both. Was there a little bit of a rivalry there at all?
Well, yeah. Well, I think you'd have to say there's, you know, definitely some, but like that, it was. We didn't ever travel together or anything like that, and I guess I'd say it was just. When you're duking it out every year for the world title and stuff, I reckon you got to call that a rivalry, but still everybody out there, you know, between like Robert and Danny and Craig, you know, and it's just kind of like all these kids now, there's more than, you know, like I think Craig should have won the world at least once. You know, I think Danny should have won the world at least once. And I think, you know, just because I feel that I was blessed to be able to have good finals and have things kind of stay together, where like another person maybe got hurt or, you know, and something kept them from being able to win a world title. You know, it just wasn't in the cards, you know. So you just count your blessings that what you were able to do and just work as hard as you can to get there. And, you know, it's God plan on what happens, and it is what it is, you know. So we're going to do what we can to help everybody get to where they want to be, just like Mr. Funk, you know, he's trying to help us do what we can, do what he can to help us get down, you know, and do what we want to do.
Yeah. From 1990 until 2000, every world title in the Bronc riding was won by either somebody named Eppbauer or Dan Mortensen. Robert won two. Billy started in 93. If it wasn't Billy, it was Dan. That was a really interesting generation of saddle bronc riders in that time period, I think. Yeah, you competed with and against some of the greatest guys in the world.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No. And I think it's, yeah, I, you know, I think it's, that's the way it's been that way forever. And, you know, and still is, you know, I mean, there's every year, you know, everything kind of changes a little bit here and there. And, you know, the horses have kind of changed a little bit, you know, and everything sort of changes, but still there's, you know, there's still, the awesome great cowboys, you know, now and, you know, always was and always will be. So
I want to ask you one more question about your career, and then I want to talk about what you guys are doing today. And I remember, Billy, it was August of your final year of competing. You were about to go over the $3 million mark in career earnings. And I remember specifically I was at the rodeo in Gooding, Idaho, and that might have been the week. You didn't go over $3 million in Gooding, but that might have been the weekend that you went over the $3 million mark. And I talked to you just briefly before the rodeo, and this is going to sound like Steve's dumb question of the day, so if I'm way off base here, please tell me. I really felt like at some point there you were just sick and tired of hearing about it. Like, let me get over $3 million so we can go on with it. Was I right at all in thinking that? It just kind of was, it came up, and at the time, I mean, Stetson Wright's already gone over $3 million now, headed toward $4 million when he gets healthy again. But at that time, that was the gold standard. And am I right in any of that? That, you know, there was kind of almost a relief that, okay, thank God I finally did it. Now these rodeo announcers will quit talking about it. Thing going on there?
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't be, I guess it wouldn't, I don't never really, you know, I didn't, it didn't bother me that everybody was talking about it. You know, I'm just glad I was able to finally get over it. You know, yeah. So it probably seemed like forever that it took to get over it, you know, and it's not because anybody's saying anything. You know, I wish you could just say that you was riding better, and you know that a guy just tipped right over, you know, and got right over it, you know. But you know, I think the just like that, the whole age and everything is creeping up on me, you know, and just wasn't going like it was before, and actually had Holly and the kids rodeoing around a little bit then, you know, and so it was just hard to kind of get, or harder, I should say, to get over the top of that, you know, and you got to just tie everything to that, you know, and like I say, just thank God we finally made it, you know, but it sure didn't bother me that everybody was, you know, because I think it was everybody's pulling for you to help you try to get over it, you know, so it was more kind of like a, I didn't have to do it for me. I wanted to do it for everybody else too, you know. I wanted their support, you know, to show too that I, you know, I appreciate everything that they've done. So
if I confess, if you would have been able to go out at that rodeo in Idaho that night and had a horse that you could stick a 90 on, and we knew you were going to win a big check at the rodeo, I already had rehearsed what I was going to say. it was going to be a speech, but anyway, that's a long time ago now. Talk about what you're doing today. The Eppauer family is big time in the horse business. I spent some time talking to your wife Holly a couple of times while we were setting this up, and you were running around out with veterinarians taking care of recent mares and doing all those kinds of things. You can be out until midnight some nights, it sounds like, just taking care of horses. Talk about what you guys are doing today.
Yeah, well, we're trying to minimize that midnight deal, but yeah, while we board recipient mares for ETS, so like this year, I guess we've kind of started out, we got about 300 head of them, and like that, we started putting them under lights just before we left to go to the finals, and then just the other day here, like 1st of February, then we started checking mares, so that as those mares are cycling, then they put these embryos in, and you know, they're actually doing the ICSI deal and all that kind of stuff now too. So, you know, I'm just boarding all those recipient mares for the clinic. So they've got to check, you know, anywhere from 10 to 50 head, basically about every day. And we're gonna skip today. We're just kind of getting started this year, so we get to skip today. But then we're, you know, we've been doing it, I guess we did it 3 days in a row, and then now we're skipping a day. And then, of course, we try not to do nothing on Sundays. But yeah, with as much mud and everything as we got around here right now, it is a task to get, say, like 30 head out of, you know, out of 200 head of them. You know, you kind of, in the way the pens are, we need to get these pens cleaned out, you know, between the mud and everything, you know, it's just kind of a little bit hectic at the moment, you know, but it's fun. Like, to me, it's fun, you know, because you're playing cowboy, you're horseback, you know, and you're getting to handle horses, you know, so it's a whole lot of fun for me. And then like that, we're the horses that we're raising, we got PC Frosty Pit, and that's our stud, and then we got you know, like 15 mares that were, and we breed to some outside studs and stuff too, you know, but Holly and JC are running barrels on the things that we're raising, and then Treg, he's actually roping on them and then plus like Trail, Robert's boy, you know, he's bulldogging, roping on them, Shade roping on his a little bit, or was, I should say, not anymore, but you know, we've just been very blessed with some great horses and very nice horses, and we've got some that the girls have sold, and they've, you know, they've got out there now, and you know, there's you know, they're really doing some good on them, you know, and hopefully they will. I guess that's what the hopes are. So, but it's a lot of fun to when you're breeding them and raising those colts and training them and doing it all yourself. It's just, it's really fun to see when somebody can, really go do some good on them. And, you know, we've got, you know, hopefully we've got one out there. Hopefully that'll maybe be at the finals here next year, you know, but, we'll just kind of see what happens, and you know, it's definitely a full-time job.
Yeah. You tell me if I've got this right. You bought a stallion off the track in like 1995 named No Whistle. Is that right? Have I got
yes,
that?
Sir. Yeah.
And you had a son of his named Whistle at the Babes. Is that right?
Yes. And that was out of Foles Debbie, which was, you know, she's got major, big stats on her. But there was, so Whistle at the Babes is by, the old No Whistle and out of that Foles Debbie.
How come you went to the track to buy your first stud? Was that your first?
Well, I didn't. I was actually rodeoing, and Holly actually, when she was growing up, she rode a No Whistle back like when she was, well, probably even before high school or any of that. But she rode and she liked that horse. And anyway, she found out about we had some horses that I'd brought from South Dakota. And we had them down here, and she found out about that old No Whistle stud that a guy had over here. So she actually ended up paying, I think she gave $2,500 for him, and he was 26, I think, at the time. And so like that, she had never done any of it, and we'd always pasture bred everything in South Dakota. And, you know, so it opened a whole big old can of worms to, you know, but we sure got some great horses, you know, what the kids have grown up, their whole lives basically on stuff that we've raised and trained ourselves, you know, and like that, Holly and JC absolutely love to run barrels on them and have done very well on them, you know, so, we'll just keep trying to work at it and see where we go.
Holly and JC have had some pretty good luck. You mentioned, you know, you had some horses you'd sold, and my theory is that's really the way to build your horse business is to start to get some horses out there that people have bought and have them do well on them. But your wife and your daughter have both had real good success, I think, haven't they?
Yeah, they've done very well. And like Holly, well, she had one, and she actually was third or fourth at Pendleton one year back in the day when I was still rodeoing. And, you know, I think she'll win Walla Walla. And, you know, she did some good at some places on like that first batch of No Whistle deals. And you know, JC and is working on well, she's doing a lot of good too, you know, on them around here. But everybody there, we're just kind of hanging around here pretty close, you know. We're 1 or 2 hours from the house, and I guess earlier on you know, Holly was circuit rodeoing a little bit more. She went to the circuit finals a couple times, but like that, now they're you know, the JC's been going to maybe 1 or 2 circuit rodeos, but just doesn't really have that desire to leave. You know, when we can load up 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 horses, you know, and go to a barrel race, a 40 barrel race around here, that's kind of what they want to do. They don't want to just load up one horse and go run one barrel off in Texas. You know, they want to be able to load it up and load the trailer up and ride 4 or 5, you know, and do a bunch of good instead of just one, you know. So,
Billy, I am remembering, I'll bet you I foul this up, and you can correct me with what I'm about to get wrong. I'm remembering an interview I did once with Trell. I want to say it was at the Timed event, and we got to talking about growing up in the Ettbauer family, and he said the secret that nobody knows is, you know, my dad, Robert, and my uncles would get home sometimes from rodeoing, and it'd be late in the evening, and we'd be saddling up horses and going out and roping calves or team roping or something. Does that sound familiar to you guys? Was that part of your lives when you were competing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's, well, like Robert, if he wasn't riding Bronx, he's roped kids, and he was all about it. And those kids, they grew up that they were out there, you know, they were out there. It didn't matter. You was basically roping on everything every day. You know, if you was around, you know, if you wasn't out there on the road, you was roping. So yeah, like that. I'm no great roper or nothing like that, but we did a lot of it back in the day. So,
well, maybe
you wouldn't have seen me at a rodeo. Now, Robert, he rodeoed a little bit with it, you know, but he was more on the horse training side of it than actually rodeoing doing it, you know, but he roped kids and loved it.
Yeah. You know, the thing about being in the horse business, at least from our perspective, and we don't have near as many as you do, obviously, but, you know, you kind of get impatient sometimes with these colts, don't you? With these babies, you want to, you know, you get them on the ground and you know it's going to be 4 or 5 years before you really know what you got there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it takes a while, but that's the, you know, if you just got the patience, it's sure great to see it. And then once you get them to where you want them, then they get old way too fast, you know. So it, yeah, it's it's great fun, but it's sure sad when you lose them too, you know. So,
yeah. Etbauer Performance Horses. I'm reading from BillyEtbauer.com. Family business. Billy Hawley and family race some of the country's top speed bred performance horses. And it's turned into, I mean, it's a lot of work to have that many horses around, but it sounds to me like it's turned into something that you're justifiably very proud of, Billy, I think is where I want to go with this. And, sounds to me like you're enjoying the heck out of it.
Oh yeah, no, it is. It's great. And like that, you know, anything with the cowboy part of it, you know, I'm just all about it. You know, I mean, and like that, we got the grandkids. My oldest boy, Cord, he's got the two grandsons, and they just walked down here a little bit ago, and they're 2-1 now, you know, so we got to try to keep them coming. So hopefully these kids can, you know, if they so desire to go do it, you know, they don't have to go be cowboys, you know, but we sure want to have good horses underneath of them, you know, and so we'll just see what happens. And it's just a blessing to be able to have them. Yeah. So,
Billy, I really appreciate your time. It is such an honor to have a chance to catch up with you, tell your story, let folks hear about your travels back in the day and now today, what you're up to. And I want to finish the way I started. Part of the reason that everybody loved the Etbauers is you and Robert and Danny and I think even Craig, I God bless him, I wish he was, you know, and I wish I'd have had a chance to get to know him a little bit better than I did, but y'all were always so humble and so, you know, not out there to put on a big show for you, but let your writing do the talking. But I started this by talking about, you know, the Etbauer boys and the number of bronc riders who even today say you guys are the people they look up to. How much does that mean to you to know that there's a bunch of saddle bronc riders and a bunch of rodeo cowboys who still look back on the Etbauers and see the people that they want to recognize and be like?
Well, it's an honor and a blessing. I mean, you know, you can't, I don't know. Robert, he and Craig, actually, they, you know, like Craig was a coach out there at Panhandle State for the rodeo team there. And you know, after we lost Craig, then Robert took over, you know, so they're always doing. And we've got the school, the Bronx school out there the second weekend in May. Every year, and we have since like 90, whatever, you know. So, you know, I guess Robert and Craig, you know, have done more than what Danny and I have, but we always go try to help put on that school, you know, we're always trying to help those kids. But like that, we just thank everybody for all the support, and, you know, we're going to do anything and everything we can to help those kids, you know, down the road, you know, and just thank God for the abilities that we had and was able to do that, you know. So just thanks everybody for what they've all done, because that's what made it all worth it, is everybody's support. So
I kept you way longer than I asked you for, Billy, and thank you so much for your time.
No, you're good, and thank you. I appreciate it, and appreciate you guys talking to you. So thanks.
Billy Etbauer joining us on Legends of the Hall. Legends of the Hall is sponsored by Wrangler, the official Western Wear Pro Rodeo. Long live Cowboys. Please join us on 8 Seconds Media. Like and subscribe to all of our programs, the Steve Kenyon Podcast and the Legends of the Hall Podcast at 8secondsmedia.com. God bless everybody. I'm Steve Kenyon.